A second category of questions came in on the subject of legalism. How would you approach a congregation trapped in years of legalistic tradition? I would not attack legalism. I would not preach on Christian liberty. I would not assault their consciences either by flaunting liberty on a personal level. I think there is a very important principle that comes at the end of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, where the Apostle Paul says, if you go to the house of a weaker brother as a guest, with a weaker brother as a guest, and meat offered to idols is served by the host who's a non-believer, you know the scenario. The non-believer is going to serve you, and you're there with a weaker brother, a believer, and he serves you meat offered to idols. What do you do? Evangelistic strategy would say, eat it, because that's how you will show kindness and favor to your host who doesn't know any better. However, if you do that, you will offend your weaker brother. So, who do you offend? Do you offend the non-believer, or do you offend your weaker brother? And the answer in that text is you offend the non-believer. And the message that the non-believer gets is that you love one another, and by this all men will know that you are my disciples. So you defer always to the weaker brother. And in many cases, when you're talking about legalism, you're not talking really about works salvation. You're talking, I assume, about an approach to the Christian life that is needlessly restrictive and narrow and artificially constructed around certain behaviors that aren't even biblical issues. And what you need to do is understand that's where they are. And you want to demonstrate love to them, because that's how people know that Christ has changed your life, because you are demonstrably sacrificial and loving to those people who maybe think differently than you do. The unbeliever at the dinner might conclude, if this Christian offended his brother and wouldn't offend him, it's better to be a non-believer than to be a believer. You also have to understand that the conscience is a mechanism given by God to everyone. It is a device. It is a mechanism by which we are excused or accused, right? Romans 2. It is informed by our convictions. Conscience is informed by conviction. I suppose no one has a more highly informed and aggressive conscience than a Muslim terrorist, right? They do what they do with passion, to the point of their own suicide, believing that they're going to end up with 72 virgins on pillows in the next life. Their conscience frees them to do what they do because it is informed by a set of convictions that have been drummed into them. So you have to understand, and you have to understand that when it comes into the Christian realm, you have a dilemma between reinforming them at the same time that you don't train them to ignore their conscience, or after they're reinformed, then their conscience, they're going to be used to not doing what their conscience tells them. That's why Paul is so clear on that at the end of Romans, where he talks about, you know, you've got to understand, some people consider the day one way, some consider it another way, some consider dietary things this way and that way. You can't train people to ignore conscience. You have to take the long-term approach to reinform the conscience. And I would suggest that the first way to do that is to move people off the rules they live by onto the person of Jesus Christ. And just preach the glories of Christ. Get in a gospel and stay there until those people have been liberated from rules to love for Christ, until they have been literally swept away in awe and wonder over their affections for Jesus Christ. rather than try to instruct them on the biblical disciplines, which again is just another set of rules, let them be lost in wonder, love, and praise over the person of Christ, and you watch those things begin to disappear.